Well, good morning. Good morning. Or good early afternoon here. And we're going to continue program 10, Letters on Occult Meditation, video commentary. We're on page 3132. And we've been talking about the specific gravity of the causal body, which is a relative, its relative density. And we're just about finished with that section. I could not, unfortunately, continue. I was quite close to the end of it, but now we will continue. The gravity, I suppose the specific gravity of the causal body fixes the moment of emancipation and marks the time when the work of beautifying and building is completed, when the Temple of Solomon is erected, and when the weight, occultly understood, of the causal body measures up to the standard looked for by the hierarchy. I suppose there are different states and different standards. And at this time, they look for the destruction of the causal body to occur at a certain point when the standard is reached. When we talk about weight, it's the result of gravity, really. And we have learned in comparing relative densities that the matter, I think, of the third of the higher mental plane is the milieu in which the causal body takes its birth. And I suppose the question of its comparison with the density of that type of matter will determine when liberation can come. Of course, we cannot think in those technical terms. The solar angel would think in those technical terms. We can simply try to bring quality into the causal body and serve with everything that we have. Then the work of destruction supervenes and liberation approaches. Well, destruction at the fourth initiation and liberation at the fifth initiation. Spring has been experienced and the full verdure of summer has succeeded. He speaks a lot in symbolic language in this book. Have you noticed? Well, in a way, it's such a technical book that I think it's what he must do in order to make himself understood. Spring has been experienced and full verdure. There's a little bit of verdure in the spring. The full verdure of summer has succeeded, and now must be felt the disintegrating force of autumn. Not only this time, only this time, it is felt and applied on mental levels and not on physical. So he's giving us the idea of the seasons and what happens to the form during the seasons. The axe is laid to the root of the tree, more symbolism, but the life essence is garnered into the divine storehouse. And, you know, first, that divine storehouse is at first the spiritual triad, then later the monad. The content of the causal body is the accumulation by slow and gradual process of the good of each life. Well, it's laid out so beautifully, so utterly clearly here, you know, and this is what we have to understand. Goodness is developed in each life, and it is not lost. That which is not good is stored in the atomic triangle and rests as karma, waiting again to be dealt with in the next incarnation. That which is good is less Saturnian in this case and more Jupiterian, and is elevated into the causal body at first, and there can be used later to deal with the necessities of service and also with the karma which has yet to be balanced. The building proceeds slowly at first, I guess very slowly when you think about how long it takes to open the petals of the egoic lotus, the earlier petals in the Hall of Ignorance. But towards the end of incarnation, on the probationary path, the number 777 takes us through that path, 700 plus 70 plus 7. And on the path of initiation, the work proceeds rapidly and the petals unfold rapidly. And the curve becomes less tied to the x-axis and more asymptotically to the y-axis. It rises. The structure has been reared, and each stone has been quarried in the personal life. Of course, you know, in masonry, we polish the stone. It's rough at first and then polished later so that the temple can be beautiful. And when you polish a stone, there's lots of applied friction, maybe through heavier machines, maybe through sanding. Eventually, it involves some sort of surface covering that brings in a shine. We may have the diamond in the rough, but it has to be cut and it has to be polished. On the path, in each of its two divisions, the work of completing and beautifying the temple proceeds with greater rapidity. And I guess we'd have to ask, two divisions or three? Two divisions? Let's just call it discipleship and the path of initiation. But really, what we have is a path of aspiration. Oh, points of achievement. No, path of aspiration. Path of probation. Path of discipleship and path of initiation. Path of discipleship is a bit like path of probationary initiation. So briefly and in conclusion, see, we could have finished this the last time, but you know, there are programs to do. Briefly and in conclusion of this matter, I would seek to point out that the circumference of the causal body varies according to type and ray. Okay, well, that makes sense. And maybe he'll tell us how this is so. Some egoic bodies are of a form more circular than others. Some are more ovoid and others more elongated in shape. And, you know, with this elongation, one wonders here about the sixth ray causal body. It is the content and the pliability that matter. So this would be what we can call flexibility for the sake of adaptation in living and in service. And above all, the occult permeability of the lower auric egg that permits of contact with other egos, yet remains or retains identity. Well, these are issues of inner form, issues of inner physics, and he doesn't spell it out exactly, but you know, just the way the sixth ray type has the long face, such as the Master Jesus had, or the initiate Jesus at the time, and I think even the Master Jesus now. So maybe the causal body is more elongated. It's kind of a comparison that seems justified to hypothesize, and maybe the second ray, you know, is rounder and more spherical because it tends to be Jupiterian in that respect. And, well, those seem to be the two types, well, three types. Let's call it like this. Three types. Circular, spherical, ovoidal, and elongated. Now that's the question, is that which is ovoidal considered to be elongated? Well, these things will have to be solved, and in any case, they're not the focus of our attention at the moment. There's nothing we can do about that. That's just the inner form and inner physics. Anyway, the occult permeability of the lower auric egg, and you know, there is a higher auric egg, perhaps the temple of Ezekiel, and this permeability permits of contact with other egos, which is thus the enhancement of consciousness. That merges itself with its fellows, yet preserves individuality, and that absorbs all that is desirable, and I would say here, especially the second ray egoic lotus, and yeah, the second ray egoic lotus. It's not quite the same as accumulation of the third ray egoic lotus, yet ever keeps its own shape. So What we have here is the ongoing simultaneous presence of the group unification of individuals who maintain their own can the word be shape or structure? So both are found together. Presence. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's going to be it for the specific gravity of the causal body. And up here, I don't know how far we have to go. I think point in evolution, specific gravity, yeah. And then comes something else. The third point that we have to keep in mind. Oh. Oh, it's a long way back to that reference. Point in evolution is the first one, yeah. Specific gravity is the second one, the second consideration, and then in general, the size and circumference, we've already mentioned that a bit. But let's see, what is this point after point in evolution, specific gravity, and something else here that is considered to be, I think, the third consideration. It's part of the next letter. Speed reading, right? The condition of the causal body. Maybe that's a point four after point three, maybe specific gravity and size or circumference went together as two and three, and here's maybe four. The fourth factor, underlying the choice of a method of meditation is our subject today and consists of the condition of the causal body. We've already seen that pliability and permeability are important, haven't we? So far, pliability and permeability are important. The place, or let's say the stage of development as one of the five stages regarding the inner point of light or flame. That's another one. And pliability, permeability, particular stage in which we find ourselves, shape is to be considered. And, we've just mentioned that, which would be rounded, ovoidal, and elongated. Not yet specified. According to Ray. The second ray is Jupiterian, which is promotes a rounding out, but the seventh ray has much of Jupiter in it as well. And when you look at how the seventh ray is created, it seems to be the result of equal portions of the three rays of aspect. So there's a kind of rounding out there as well. I wouldn't suspect that the first ray is especially rounded out, because the first ray, you know, has for its symbol the line, the arrow, the path direct, that which is produced through the driving forward through space. The third ray does accumulate, and hence maybe there is some rounding. I wouldn't know quite what to say about shape and the fourth and fifth rays. Sixth ray, elongation. And, well, we'll have to find a place for ovoidal if we distinguish it from elongated. They aren't necessarily the same. But these will be some of the revelations of inner form when we can register, really notice, see directly such conditions. We just at the moment have to know that there is an inner world, there is a Temple of Solomon. If we're a fairly advanced humanity and not even aboriginal humanity is, with much less experience, is building a causal body. And sometimes at the very beginning of that building process, we hear the phrase colorless ovoid. Maybe we don't so much hear colorless sphere. The connection with the egg is very clear. There is that analogy of the yolk, the white, and the shell, and the chick is born out of the egg if there is incubation and, you know, the right kind of heat. And the true man is born out of the egg of the egoic lotus. Now, you can say of so many of us that we are as yet the unborn. It's better than being the undead, you know. We're the unborn because we have not yet freed ourselves from the nurturing temple, the nurturing egg. And if we had freed ourselves, then maybe of what the Tibetan has written, only some of it would be of great interest concerning our next step ahead. With how we are at the moment, most of the students looking towards the second initiation at some point, and very few having taken the third or looking towards it, we're still very much in the temple. We're in the egg. And we're being nurtured by that which has been accumulated of higher energy within that egg. And that's a question to a degree of permeability, not just to each other, but that is nurturing too, but to the higher energies which can enter the egoic lotus and lead to the enhancement, the beautification of the temple, yes, and also the enhancement of the abilities of the one, the true being, who rests at the heart of the temple as a projection of the monad in extension. So, the condition of the causal body. That's what we're talking about now. And I guess, you know, really, when I'm thinking about what the Tibetan has written, there's a tremendous amount of information here about the causal body, egoic lotus. There's quite a bit in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, but I can't think of any other of the Tibetan books in which it is so, carefully presented and in detail. The presentation of the condition of the causal body and its growth and development in those two books, Letters on Occult Meditation and A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. Some of the psychological effects come later, the healing effects, the initiatory effects, all that. But in terms of the technicalities of how this body is formed and how it develops, the two books mentioned have the greatest contribution made. We have dealt with the causal body, he says, in its relationship to the personality or lower self, showing the interplay between the two and their interdependence. You see how he, of course, summarizes as he moves on, because the mind needs that to be told what has been said. Well, or the three factors. Here's what I'm going to say. Now I say it, and here's what I just said. Through steady application to occult meditation, and we might say definitely a warming process, and through the gradual stilling of the lower mind, so that energies can penetrate the chaos, mutability, through concentration and the wise following of the egoic ray meditation, of which he has given many. He has told us, according to our ray, how we might meditate, and given us many hints about that. He's also given us meditations that anyone can follow, regardless of the ray. Through steady application to occult meditation, through the gradual stilling of the lower mind, be still and know that I am God. What a profound statement that one is. Be still and know that I am God. Through concentration and the wise following of the egoic ray meditation, balanced by the personality ray meditation, and DK in assigning meditation, DK would consider both, we found that the relationship of the causal body to the personality became ever closer, and we call this infusion, and the channel connecting the two became ever more clear and adequate. So, you can say that meditation unblocks the channel if done correctly. This resulted eventually, we saw, in a shifting of polarization from the lower to the higher, and later to complete emancipation from both. So the lower personality, the higher, the soul within the causal body, and later to complete emancipation from both. Centralization ensuing then in the spiritual consciousness, which is, beyond, in a way, the consciousness of what we normally consider the soul. This is within the spiritual triad. We dealt with the matter from the lower point of view, seeing it from the standpoint of a man in the three worlds. We always change our point of view. And realistically, given what we are at this time, seeing it from a spiritualized personality perspective is maybe the best we can do. All right. So let me increase that, and this is the summary. This regards the interplay between the two, and so much of our spiritual life still right now is all about the interplay between these two. We don't have to put it in complicated language. It's, even the beginners, there is a higher power and there is a lower habitual focus we call the personality, and our consciousness within the personality has to appeal to the higher power for its infusion, its downflow, its permeation, its infusion. Whatever may be the physics of that, a kind of technical meta physics, we will one day learn. The Solar Angel knows that very well, having been through all kinds of training regarding that within the star Sirius, or, under the supervision of that particular logos. So that's the summary. And we just say, excellent summary. Because we want to fix these important points in our minds so that they are there as points of illumination to be connected with other points of illumination, producing even more light. Today, we shall deal with the matter from the standpoint of the higher self, from the egoic level, and consider the relationship of that self to the hierarchy, to surrounding egos, and to the spirit. So we see Master DK switching perspectives. Yeah. And we can say, now comes a change of perspective. It will be difficult to do more than give some few hints, for much that I could say would be little comprehended and much be too occult and dangerous for general communication. Many who are not serious in the long run would read what is said. Three things need to be imparted, and when wisely meditated upon, may lead to illumination. Okay. These are the three things, I guess. The ego on its own plane realizes consciously its relationship to the master and seeks to transmit that consciousness to the personality. Okay, that's one factor. And that probably its own plane is the higher mental plane, and especially the second and third subplane. I have not yet seen that the entire ego is transferred. The center of the entire ego is transferred to the first subplane, though there is that peculiar statement about the placement of the jewel and the lotus as if between the higher mental plane and Buddhic plane. The higher self on its own plane is not trammeled by time and space. Higher self, is there a difference? Between the ego and the higher self, I guess it depends on context. The true ego is the spiritual triad, but so often the consciousness within the causal body is referred to as the ego. And the higher self, true higher self, really, is the spiritual triad, even monad, but so frequently the consciousness within the egoic lotus is called the higher self. So we cannot look at the words and devoid of the context and think that the words always indicate the same thing. I saw that the other day when we were discussing Manvantara and Mahamanvantara, which at times seem to be used interchangeably, and the word Kalpa and Mahakalpa. In that, you know, extensive footnote number 6 and in other references. So we have to get beyond the words and appreciate the context in which we are working and thereby achieve accuracy of understanding. So the higher self on its own plane is not trammeled by time and space. Do we even know what that means? Yeah. And knowing the future as well as that which is past, at least up to a certain point, I forget what he said, maybe a few lives ahead, a few lives back, maybe 5, seeks to bring the desired end nearer and make it more rapidly a fact. What does it mean not to be trammeled by time and space? Trammel, of course, is to be caught and imprisoned and have one's freedom bound, curtailed. I suppose trammels are like some kind of chains. Not to be trammeled by time and space. Well, when we can realize, I'll just put it down, what I'm thinking. To avoid trammeling, we must eliminate the notion of extension. In both time and space. Space is, our conception of space is based upon the perception of extension. Things seem spread out and not superimposed. Our notion of time also demands extension. Moments are spread out and not superimposed. But what happens when there is the superimposition of points in space and points in time? What then? It's hard almost to conceive. I think it is hard to conceive. trembling. Okay, two M's. Well, I'm in the British spelling here anyway. We have to spend a little bit of time each day eliminating the illusion of extension while still in the myopic world, taking it into consideration as a presented actuality. But, you know, really, it's all a unison and a superimposition rules, and all points are the same point, and really no point at all. I mean, as enigmatic as that may seem, we have to collapse the normal extension in time and collapse the normal extension in space. By normal, I mean what we usually perceive and think we perceive. And also then the higher self or ego on its own plane has direct relationship with other egos on the same ray and on a corresponding concrete or abstract ray, and realizing that progress is made in group formation works on that plane for the helping of his kind. So on the higher planes, we are helping each other, especially if there is identicality of ray, or what can I call it? Harmony of ray, similarity of ray, identicality. Like if I'm on the second ray, the communication with other second-rate types is the easiest, but it's also relatively easy to work with the fours and the sixes. And, you know, and DK seems to point out at some point that it's never easy to put the two and the three together. And that's, he gave the example of a person who was a first-ray soul, a fifth-ray personality, a fourth-ray mind, a second-ray astral, and a third-ray physical. The problem was in adjusting the second and third ray to each other, and that's very much a planetary problem that we have right now, because we have on this planet a second-ray emerging soul and a third-ray well-established personality. So these facts are already half apprehended among students, but by a slight elaboration, I may make it clearer. He certainly is working to bring the light into our consciousness. You know, he is a great light bearer. And if we train long enough under him and with real concentration, we too may be sufficiently skilled light bearers to be of value in the externalization of the plan. To carry the light, you know, it's a joy to do the master's work, says Master Moria. A joy to do the master's work. And there are many types of master's work, you know, depends on the ashram with which you are affiliated or with which you will be affiliated. Being a brother, that is, within the ashram. And to carry the light is one of the joyful activities of the second ray, as long as it doesn't crush you from its weight. You know, there's Master Moria again with his statement that don't put the load of a camel on a donkey. Well, most of us are still donkeys, and we're not ready to cross the great desert carrying the heavy load, because the environment turns desert-like when we realize that it's very difficult to see the desert blossoming again. We may carry seeds, but they need to be planted and watered and nurtured. And there's much rejection of the seeds of light that we carry by the desert conditions. How did we become such a desert? Well, we fell into materialism, and that fall was aided and abetted by those very intelligent but evil beings who basically were selfish and did not want to see a human progress or share the types of abilities which they had acquired with others, and all that based on the great glamour of separativeness. So we're looking at three points, I think. Looks like the first one, if I'm correct, is this. I'll just try to check it out and see that it is so. The relationship of the ego to the hierarchy. How far can I go? Whoop. Very excellent material, really laying out the correctly these relationships. Here they are. Relationship of the ego to other egos. Each one of these points is desirable to see clarified. And this is one of my favorite pages, you know, these different groups on the high levels. So the relationship of the ego to other egos, and how far does it go? There's the immediate need. Well, we have quite a bit of material here, and some words of cheer. That's good. After we have this tremendous weight of knowledge placed upon us, he's going to offer us some words of cheer. And at times we certainly are going to need them. So this is all about the condition of the causal body. And here are three things, and I'm going to just kind of number them. One, and I'll call this two, I think. And I'll call this one two. And I'll see if I can find a three out of it all. Not sure. And the ego on its own plane. Okay. I know he's organized this, and I seem to be doing my best to disorganize it. And here's the the relationship with egos of the same or similar rays. And I wonder if this one is not number three. Well, I'm not going to worry too much about the outlining, and I capitulate now. I give up. And I'll just let the information speak for itself. And then if we want to find a way to get the outline exactly straight, then we can do that. Okay. So we've looked at, so far, the ego on its own plane and how it is not trammeled by time and space. And we've looked at the ego on its own plane in relationship to other egos of the same or harmonic or corresponding ray. And now we're going to look at the relationship of the ego to the hierarchy. And I'll just say, is this point three? Let's see. The relationship of the ego to someone master is at this stage consciously realized, but is nevertheless itself of evolutionary development. To someone master. Okay. So we have some kind of egoic consciousness on the higher mental plane. And there is this triangles kind of meditation where the master and the ego are found on the higher mental plane, and they're both contributing to the head center of the individual. And that is a combination of consciousness influences. The master's consciousness and the consciousness of the ego or higher self. So, I'm going to make this one this color. Now, here is one of those points. As we have been told, there are 60,000 million. Well, that's, 60 billion. Isn't that so? 1,000 million. So three zeros plus a million. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 60 billion units of consciousness or spirits in the evolving human hierarchy. And the big question is this throughout the entire solar system or only in relation to Earth scheme? And at first I used to think it was in relationship only to our Earth scheme. But the more I began to examine it, it began to look like man on other planets was also being considered. So one way or another, and we'll have to establish which way that is, 60 billion, referred to as Americans refer to these numbers, not so much European. I guess, what would they call it? 60 milliard in Europe, 60 billion units of consciousness or spirits in the evolving human hierarchy. And the human hierarchy, really, as we have seen when we look at the different schools on different planets, that human hierarchy is found there too. The forms and degree of development of such human units will be different on different planets, either further along than those on Earth or not as far along. But I think that when you're looking at the three solar systems, the three major, you have 100 billion units of life in the first major solar system, which is expressing very much the third ray. You have 200 billion units of life, 140 billion deva units, and 60 billion, this is the figure, human units in our present solar system, and then in the next solar system, 300 billion, maybe combined units, and it's going to make 600 billion in all, given the three solar systems. So there is a place where the term 60 billion definitely refers to mankind throughout the second solar system here, and not just on the planet. It would be easier to work with in some ways if the 60 billion referred to our planetary scheme, but it seems that there are contradictory influences. As we have been told, there are 60,000 million. I guess that's a British way of talking about it. Million is always six zeros and 1,000 is three, so nine zeros. 60,000 million units of consciousness or spirits in the evolving human hierarchy, and 2 1/3 times that many in the evolving deva hierarchy in this present solar system, which is a largely a Davic solar system. We understand why, given the numbers. These are found on causal levels. But since this book was written before 1925, great shift to the plane would naturally have affected the numbers. And that does not mean necessarily that on every planet that shift took place. So, you know, you can understand how securely veiled some of this information really is. So anyway, at least at the writing of this book, these spirits, however many billion for our planet, were found on causal levels. Of course, the movement to groups in the cosmic ethers does not necessarily mean that there are not causal bodies also representing those that have shifted to the Buddhic plane or beyond, with some remaining, some in the scientific, very mental ashrams remaining on the highest of the subplanes of mind. So these are found on causal levels, though the numbers are slightly less now, owing to the attainment of the fourth initiation by individuals from time to time. Well, naturally, you know, at the fourth initiation, you would relinquish your causal body, and so whatever you are in terms of a monad would not be working through a causal body. It would be working through some other kind of vehicle, probably on levels that pertain to the spiritual triad. And then occasionally, you know, a Maya Varupa would be created by a master, but the master would not need a causal body to create a Maya Varupa, because all of that causal quality would have been extracted. Remember, he talked about divine vampirism, extracted into the spiritual triad and its, I suppose, its permanent atoms. These egos at different stages of development are all linked with their monad spirit or Father in Heaven. Okay, well, this is getting a little bit intricate. These egos at different stages of development, however many there are, you know, I don't know if he's going to use the 60 billion figure. I suspect that since we're in a masculine incarnation in this planetary scheme, there'll be quite a few of the spirits which are human or man-related rather than Devic, even though the solar system as a whole has 2 1/3 more Devic units than units of man-related. So these egos at different stages of development are all linked with their monad spirit or Father in Heaven in much the same way, only in finer matter, as the ego is linked with the personality. There, you know, I guess you could say there are linking ridges. A link between the mental unit and the egoic lotus. One such example, the link between mental unit and the monastic permanent atom is another example. And the charts show links between the permanent atoms of the spiritual triad and the monad. Well, all of these technicalities will come to life when we can focus on those planes which are here being discussed, and actually see them as realities. I'm going to make this a little bluer. I suffer from lack of the requisite colors. All the monads are, as you know, under the control, or rather form part of the consciousness of one of the planetary spirits. And this is not the planetary entity. Planetary spirit, a planetary spirit. Okay. Is a planetary logos. On egoic levels, the egos are in a similar condition. An adept of their ray supervises their general evolution, dealing with them in groups. So monads for planetary spirits, and also groups of egos supervised by a higher being, an adept, but not a planetary logos, apparently. Let's see if that is true. These groups are formed under three conditions. As to the subray of the egoic ray, and that egoic ray, remember, is the same as the triadal ray, the secondary triadal ray given in the right-hand column on page 177. As to period of individualization or of entrance into the human kingdom, could be in a previous solar system, could be the moon chain, could be Lemuria or Atlantis. There seem to be, you know, four main points of entry. And maybe even another point of entry for those who were individualized on different planets and enter with one or more petals in process of unfoldment. So these are groups which are grouped together in the inner worlds, starting with the higher mental plane and going still higher. Obviously, not all of what is possible to know is given to us in these tabulations. Very promising tabulations, but they stop at some point. The adept on their ray handles the general supervision, but under him work the masters, each on his own ray, and with their individual groups who are affiliated with them through the karma and through point of vibration. So adepts, and we might say higher than a master, perhaps. So the adept has general control over these groups, and then there are other masters who work under the adept. The work of these subsidiary masters is ray related, and with their own individual groups who are affiliated with them through period, they, you know, in history, we might say, in history, I mean, before the Christ or the Buddha became the head of the hierarchy, there were others who were heads of the hierarchy, but they were from different historical periods. Through period, through karma, and through point of vibration. Okay, this is pretty technical. You know, it's almost better to somehow make a map. There's a little map that DK makes in a page coming up, but it doesn't take all this into consideration. Under the masters work the disciples, who have the consciousness of the higher self and are therefore able to work on causal levels and aid in the development of those egos whose causal bodies are less developed than their own. Well, we are, I'm sure, beneficiaries of that kind of work, and perhaps we also are benefiting others through our teaching or light bearing or capacities, our ability to stimulate esoterically. So this is quite a little section, you know, talking about the different groups of egos, who supervises them, an adept in general, and then a number of subsidiary masters who work in a ray-related manner, and then the disciples who have higher self-consciousness are working under the masters and also continue the to aid the development of those whose causal bodies can benefit from their presence, their teaching, their achievements. A word like adept, you know, it's pretty non-specific. It doesn't always mean the term adept can, like the term master, mean one that is higher than the fifth initiation. So here are the groupings as to subray of egoic ray, as to the period of individualization. I mean, you may have an egoic ray that is the same as another type of individual, but let's say that that you individualized on the moon chain and they individualized in Lemuria. Or maybe another group individualized in the previous major solar system and you individualized on the moon chain or in Lemuria. And then within those historical period groups, attainment, the point of attainment within the groups from a certain historical period. So there's quite a bit of organization going on there, and it's all for the sake of the kind of benefit that would be possible when you are, you know, rightly and resonantly attuned with those you can help. I might have the same egoic ray and even subray as someone who was individualized long before me. And my ability to help such an individual would be negligible compared to the ability to help someone with the same egoic or subray who was individualized more or less at the same time, because different conditions prevailed. So we can just see how much organizational mentality has to be expressed by the arrangers of these groups. And maybe the ultimate arranger here is the planetary logos himself. So magnetically, you would simply be drawn into the proper group at the proper point of tension. See, basically the change from level to level is a change in the point of tension at which one is living the subjective life. And these points of tension have a certain exclusionary property. In other words, we can be in the same space apparently and yet not contact each other or be able to at all, because our points of tension are so different. So a point of tension can be a bit like a wall Or as we modulate our point of attention and bring it closer to that of another, then communication can occur. So much depends in this question of communication on the quality of energy and the intensity of energy and the frequency of energies, whether resonant or not resonant. You know, when you take the top off of a grand piano and you hit a low note, not every one of the higher keys vibrates in resonance with the lower note struck. And thus it is with our communications. Maybe you've had the experience of being with people that you just couldn't find a wavelength on which you could communicate. I mean, they're nice people, you're a nice person, you know, but there was just, the statement is made, we had nothing to talk about, or we couldn't understand each other. So anyway, we're talking about organization of our own higher aspects and families of affiliation. Let's just say, in all this, we are talking about, we're speaking of, thinking about families of affiliation. We may know our outer family. Do we know our emotional family? Do we know our mental family? Do we know our causal family? Do we know regarding the aspects of ourselves which are higher than the causal body? Do we know our triadal families? Finally, do we know which sphere of monads we are affiliated with? Seven great spheres on the monadic plane, and probably finally three great spheres determining monadic belongingness on the logoic plane. Well, you know, let's think about it, let's ponder on this. And DK telling us all is beautifully subject to law. And as the work of developing the egoic body is dependent upon progress made in the threefold personality, let's see, development moves mostly from below to above. Maybe, let's get this correct. Maybe some triadal efflux into the egoic lotus contributes to development. But progress is generally dependent on how well we do right here in our personality living. The ego is consequently aided on lower levels by two different disciples, one working on emotional levels and reporting to another disciple who works upon mental levels. Sounds like, doesn't it, Shayla in the light? Sounds like that. Anyway, all is beautifully subjected to the law. He, the mental disciple, in his turn reports to the disciple with causal consciousness, who reports again to the master, and all this is done with the cooperation of the indwelling consciousness in the causal body. And this, as you see, entails five factors concerning themselves with the aiding of the ego in its evolutionary development. You know, you wouldn't want not to read this book, my friends, if we're going to have a real hope of advancing in the field of occultism. So we have to make progress right here and now in the dense physical body of the planetary logos, and as a result of working with our personality vehicles, actions, desires, thoughts, and then the causal body will be appropriately fed the nurturance that it needs. I also said, yes, there would be some nurturance once a certain stage is reached from the triad communicating with the causal body, but for that to happen, at least one aspect of the triangular antikarana, often pictured as triangular, has to be completed, or at least usable. The ego is consequently aided on lower levels by two different disciples. Maybe, you know, on, I don't know about the dense physical plane and etheric. Maybe we have to rely upon ourselves very much there. But, you know, the little chela can meet the guiding disciple. And even on the physical plane, you know, we oftentimes encounter a guiding disciple. But now he's talking about a more subjective type of guidance. The ego is consequently aided on lower levels by two different disciples, one working on emotional levels, I suppose seeing to the refinement of the astral body and its ridding itself or suffering itself to be rid of glamour, and one working upon mental vehicle to help keep our thinking straight and our thoughts accurate. We just see, you know, the prey of demagogues who can speak to the undisciplined astral body and the chaotic mind. That of the mass consciousness. And those people who are the prey, they just don't know what's being done to them to manipulate them, because they have not reached the point where their astral bodies are transmuted and transformed, and same with their mental bodies. They cannot think with accuracy, and they are swept by the emotions that are common to the masses of unthinking people, desiring material things and desiring instinctual things. In other words, desiring lower things. And this improvement, let's see, this nurturance, general improvement, nurture what? Well, I thought that was correct. Is done with the cooperation of the indwelling consciousness in the causal body. And we have such a consciousness, and it is useful if we can access it. This, as you can see, entails five factors concerning themselves with the aiding of the ego in its evolutionary development, i.e., in the lower worlds. So, just the way the little child doesn't know how much and how often it's being assisted by parents and other supervisors, so we don't know either. We're getting help. And we sometimes wonder why we recover or things which were really difficult and looking impossible become easier and possible. We are facilitated inwardly by disciples, initiates, which have been put to work on behalf of those like ourselves, as we will do later. And all of that is a harbinger of the kind of solar angelic supervision, which is paramount in the development. So here are five factors. And five factors. And let's see if we can understand them. The adept of his ray, and I suppose this is the a Chohan of a ray ashram, you know, like Master Moria, Master Kutumi, not yet Master DK apparently, but you know, I suspect that when Master Kutumi moves on in the age of Capricorn to become the Bodhisattva, that it will be Master DK who is the head of the second ray ashram. Okay, so the general Chohan or adept of his ray, and here, here the term adept means more than a master. Then comes the master of his group. I guess these are the subsidiary ashrams. And then a disciple with causal consciousness, so as to be able to see the effect within the causal body of the developing disciple, and then a disciple on the mental plane and a helper on the emotional plane. Notice here the term disciple. Is not used. Well, sometimes we hear about, you know, invisible helpers. And, you know, they have their heart in the right place and they are aspirants. They are not necessarily yet technically trained disciples, but they are oriented in the right direction. For a long period of lives, how long we don't know, I mean, much depends on our own efforts. The time equation, as so often said, is to a great extent in our hands. For a long period of lives, the ego remains practically unconscious of the personality, which is not yet a, as it said, downward looking soul. The magnetic link exists, but that is all, until the time comes when the personal life reaches a point where it has somewhat to add to the consciousness of the causal body, a body at first small, colorless, and insignificant. How long will that take, you know? It seemed that in the hall of ignorance, something must be done, but we just don't know what. Yes, worth reading again, I think. For a long period of lives, the ego remains practically unconscious of the personality. They really are two different entities, the personality being a projection and extension of a particular monad, and the ego really as is another entity with a different monad, even though in another way all monads are one. The magnetic link exists, but that is all until the time comes when the personal life reaches a point where it has somewhat to add to the consciousness of the causal body. A body at first small, colorless, and insignificant. Well, I think, you know, when is this moment, you know? I think not so many moments when we're dealing with the opening of the first petal of the egoic lotus, but increasingly as we move along, and certainly by the time we get into the second circle of petals, the love petals, where the higher of the pairs of opposites begins to come into focus, and one begins to sense a higher inherent power, then certainly something can be added. And even in the third petal, you know, which calls for so much enforced sacrifice. But the hour comes, just think of our long history, what it will be like to review that. When I was a child, I always had this vision of reviewing a life, just seeing everything from the perspective of the onlooker. I remember it well, and some hints about past lives were even coming in at that point. Later, I realized what they were. But the hour comes when the stones are first brought, perfected, well, polished, perfected, from the quarry of the personal life, work is required to perfect, and the first colors are painted in by the man, the builder and the artist. It reminds me, maybe later in this book, of the idea of the elves and other nature spirits, painting the flowers, something of that nature. colorless at first is our inner mechanism. And later, the colors are filled in. Still, the mystery remains about the color red because it doesn't seem to be part of the egoic lotus display of color, except maybe for some first-ray souls, but not part of the display of the petals. And yet, at some point, he seems to say that all the colors are present. But anyway, the hour comes, and you really can't put a stone within the temple unless it has been polished. You know, smoothed and polished. And I'm going to indicate that here. Then the ego begins to give attention, rarely at first. You know, it's like the master looking in every 1,000 years, every 300 years, and then with increasing frequency. But then the ego begins to give attention, rarely at first, but with increasing frequency, until lives come around in which the ego definitely works at the subjugation of the lower self and the enlargement of the communicating channel, which the master can also help enlarge, and at the transmission to the physical brain consciousness of the fact of its existence and the goal of its being. Well, it's all under the law of economy, isn't it? These higher agencies are not going to waste energy on profitless endeavors. They know when the time is ripe and when energy can be used to greatest effect. Once that is accomplished and the inner fire is freer, we remember the five stages of the nurturance of the point of light into a flame. We studied that just recently. Once that is accomplished and the inner fire is free in its passage, lives are given to the stabilizing of that impression and to the making of that inner consciousness a part of the conscious life. Well, you know, let's suppose that Gemini is prominent and lurking in the background is the effect of the mantram that instability do its work. There may be high points of realization, but stabilization must occur. And the other signs of the zodiac and certain other rays selected for the personality will help with that stabilization. So, initial contact must be stabilized over lives to come. The flame radiates downward more and more until gradually the different vehicles come into line and the man stands on the probationary path. All this has been occurring. Do we remember it? Well, will come the time when we do remember it or see it again, because the memory of nature is so thorough. It's amazing what is stored already, and the lines of connection between the memories that are stored. We can learn a lot by reviewing those connections. He is ignorant yet of what lies ahead and is conscious only of wild and earnest aspiration and of innate divine longings. He is eager to make good, longing to know, and dreaming always of someone or something higher than himself. So this is a Ray 6 period. And all this is backed by a profound conviction that in service to humanity will come the dreamed of goal to be reached when the vision becomes, I suppose, Will the dream dreamed of goal be reached? Will the vision become reality? The longing fructify into satisfaction and the aspiration be merged in sight. Yeah. And, you know, for many of us, this period of instability may have passed, and we may be now more stabilized in our pursuit. The downward gazing soul, yeah, that's what it's called. And gazing is the word, I think. Not so much looking, the downward gazing. Well, are we within the sight of a downward gazing soul? And do we focus within the causal body so that we are part of the of that which is doing the looking? Was it St. Francis that said, what we are looking for is that which is doing the looking? You know, you're kind of trying to find not the object, but the subject which sees the object. All of this, a great opportunity for unfoldment and for guiding others who maybe have less causal experience on the path of unfoldment, the kind of inevitable unfoldment if one has the will to tread the path of initiation. True discipleship, the path of true discipleship to the path of initiation. The hierarchy begins to take action, and his instruction is carried out as aforesaid. So this is probably a personal reference. Because, you know, Master DK is instructing, and some of the things maybe, you know, said to Alice Bailey, even about her own instruction, have been carefully, I think, removed from many of the books. Wisely so. Until now, the teachers have only watched and guided without definitely dealing with the man himself. All has been left to the ego and the life divine, moving all along in the right way, to carry out the plan, the attention of the masters being directed to the ego on his own plane. The ego bends every effort to quicken vibration and to force the oft-rebelling lower vehicles to respond and measure up to the rapidly increased force. So the ego is a great source of training that we have to realize, not just the master. The solar angel really is a being with much to do on its own levels and a being higher than the master, actually. So the solar angel, angel of the presence, trains the personality. Okay. And how is all of this quickening accomplished? This extension of the egoic nature into the personality nature bringing about increasing infusion. It is largely a matter of increased fire or heat and consequent intensification of vibratory capacity. This is a reference to HPB and her discussion of the hothouse plants that we all are because we've had that implantation of the guide, the guiding trained source that was once human and has been trained into a new type of hierarchical work, or a new creative hierarchy, a solar angelic hierarchy. It's the solar angel is not a member of the same creative hierarchy as the human monads are. They are members of the fifth creative hierarchy, which has taken the fourth creative hierarchy under a condition of sustained training. The egoic fire waxes ever greater until the work is done and the purificatory fire becomes the light of illumination. Ponder on this sentence. And, you know, the main idea there is the intensified purificatory fire gives way to the light of illumination. We all know that we're not going to shine unless purification has occurred. And the stone in the temple will not sparkle until it has been smoothed and polished. Another way of saying the same thing. And, you know, a kind of analogy that maybe seventh ray types like, particularly as they enjoy the final product. The egoic fire waxes ever greater until the work is done and the purificatory fire becomes the light of illumination. Some of us concentrate so mightily upon purification that we don't allow ourselves to make the transition into resultant light. But, you know, a lot of these old sayings, they come to life when we say that cleanliness is next to godliness, or the removal of the dross and the dirt reveals the presence, the God presence. It's no longer obscured. And opaqueness becomes translucence, and translucence becomes transparency. As above, so below. On each rung of the ladder, the process is repeated. The monad at the third initiation begins to be conscious of the ego. Now, that's an important one. That's important. And we, in our own glorified consciousness, begin to be conscious of the monad. Before that, and during the probationary path of probationary initiation, we have become aware of the presence of the soul. But the presence of the monad occurs for us when the monad, on its own very high level of awareness becomes aware of the soul. So kind of a circle is created. I think this is a very interesting idea. You would think that, you know, well before that, since in a way the monad has to be aware of its personality, the triad, but the ego on the higher mental plane is kind of like a physical vehicle for the triad, and maybe something that the monad does not have to take into consideration until the opportunity to really work on the denser levels is presented by a personality which has achieved a degree of soul infusion and general spiritual adequacy. The work then is more rapid owing to the rarity of the material and the fact that resistance is a factor in the three worlds, but not elsewhere. Well, and why is that? Why? Because the three lower worlds are the dense physical body of the planetary logos. And especially the lower 18 subplanes. Lots of technical stuff here, isn't it so? But we can train ourselves in the fifth ray. One day it will be necessary. The different initiations are ruled by different rays. Seventh ray, first initiation. Sixth ray, second initiation. Fifth ray, third initiation. Fourth ray, fourth initiation. First ray, fifth initiation. Going on, third ray, sixth initiation. Second ray, seventh initiation. Rays of attribute, the eighth initiation. Rays of aspect, the ninth initiation. You know, keep that page in mind, page 340 of esoteric, of the rays and the initiations. And you'll see some very important information condensed. So when the monad begins to be conscious of the ego at the third degree, then speed. The work then at the third degree, when the monad becomes conscious of the ego, considering the ego as the consciousness in the causal body, it's more rapid. And, I don't know, I suppose the specific gravity of these centers on the higher planes is much lower than, they float in a way, much lower than the specific gravity of the general milieu or medium of the lower planes. Okay. So pain has a lot to do with resistance. He says, hence pain ceases for the master. Pain has so much to do with resistance and with separation of that which should be whole. That is, pain as we know it on Earth, which is largely pain in matter. Nevertheless, NVTL. Yeah, nevertheless, the master's looking on at humanity experience a kind of exquisite pain through identification. Will humanity make the right choices? Will there be more suffering that is needless? Poor choices will lead to suffering. Here it is, the year 2020, and I've noticed some very poor choices which have resulted in many more deaths in the pandemic than necessary. Poor choices for secondary and tertiary values and not keeping the essential before the eyes. The pain that lies hid in comprehension, not resistance, is felt to the highest circles. Yea, there's an anachronism. It reaches to the Logos himself. But this is beside the point and well nigh incomprehensible to you who are as yet trammeled by matter. Well, a different kind of pain is there, and DK talks about it when he says, well, you think that we in our safe retreats do not know what's going on and do not care and do not suffer because we are safe. And he basically says, you have no idea how we participate in your process through identification. The pain that lies hid in comprehension and not resistance. And the law prevents us from intervening. But certainly, this is the law of freedom on Sirius, which is the great exemplar for our Soto Logos. We just can't intervene and make everything right and rob those afflicted with the opportunity of straightening out, of overcoming, of becoming the victor on their own, robbing them of the opportunity by creating circumstances that of relief. The relief has to pretty much come from what they do on their own behalf. So this pain is felt to the highest circles. Yea, it reaches to the Logos himself. And maybe he means the Soto Logos, I suppose, because it's still a non-sacred Soto Logos compared to Sirius. And certainly our planetary Logos is very much subject to pain. All right. Now here is the next. Here is the next section that when I went over it before, I kind of missed it. And that's relationship, and let's see if I can. Find it here, yeah. So let's just call this point one. And relationship of the ego to the hierarchy, that's number one. And continuing along this line comes the next one, which is relationship of the ego to its own development. And I'll just do it that way. All right. Relationship of the ego to its own development. And the first one was repeating so that I myself remember, and you too, relationship of the ego to the hierarchy. Okay. See, when the word ego is used, you know, we're dealing with that entity, so often we are, with that entity which has its own monadic life, which is in a way distinct from the monadic life of the man, even though eventually all monads are one. So first here, he's dealing with facts, and he wants to elaborate on them a bit, which he has been doing. The relationship of the ego to the hierarchy, and now the relationship of the ego to its own development. The ego seeks to bring about the desired end in three ways. Now, you know, what is developing here? Let's just say the solar angel is not wholly avataric because it is continuing to undergo needed development through its supervision of a human personality. Okay. So how does the ego bring its own development? Desired end of its own development in three ways. And is it this being that is developing, or is the, or is the extension of the monad within the causal body also undergoing development? And I would say yes. We as a fundamental consciousness, the consciousness of the monad in downward extension and constriction and attenuation, yes, are undergoing development as well. So how does that particular center, working out on the higher mental plane, either the third sublevel or the second sublevel, continue with its development? And now DK is going to give us some ways of doing it. Number one, by definite work on abstract levels, it aspires to contact and enclose the permanent atom, its first direct approach to the triad. Here, we seem to be talking about the soul in incarnation. Or the extension of the soul encapsulated within the personality. So we, the soul in incarnation, the disciple, are aspiring to work on the abstract mental levels. And, you know, we don't really tend to know entirely how to do that. I mean, in other words, as I've often said, we mistake complexity for abstraction. So sometimes we mistake complexity, concrete complexity, for abstraction. So the mental permanent atom is the first goal of our antichoronic endeavors, and the chance of contacting that are, at our stage of evolution, much better than the almost impossible task of directly contacting on its own plane the Buddhic permanent atom or the Atmic permanent atom. So this is one factor. Of three that is operative. So we're talking about its own development and how it goes about that. But notice here the word ego, a little tricky here. Note that the word ego here signifies the soul in incarnation in the dense physical body of the planetary logos or solar logos. You know, I've often spoke about the lower 21 subplanes being the dense physical body of the solar logos, but the lower 18 subplanes being for sure the dense physical body of the planetary logos. And what then are the subplanes of the higher mental plane to the planetary logos? Are they dense, or is it some transitional phase? All right, so one of the ways is through definite work on abstract levels. One of the ways of what? Of promoting the desired end of its own development. And now the second way is by definite work on sound and color, with the aim in view of stimulation and vivification, working thus in groups and under the guidance of a master. You know, we are told that there are certain groups of the new groups that are appearing that will be working with sound and color. But apparently, from what we see here, they are externalizations of larger interior groups. I guess we could say that about almost any of the externalizing groups. Some of them seed groups and others simply useful groups that we don't necessarily call seed groups, but maybe they are affiliated with certain of the seed groups. So again, this is the the relationship of the ego to its own development. Now, it can develop as the ego or soul in incarnation, or it can develop as the ego on its own plane. We can say two types of development are possible. The ego developing on its own plane, and the ego developing as the soul infused, as the soul in incarnation. And do we have the sense of when most normally we are being the soul in incarnation, facing mostly and preoccupied mostly with our personality vehicles, or when we actually have slipped into the presence of the soul on its own plane, slipped into the meditation of the soul on its own plane? And here the third one is by frequent attempts to definitely control the lower self, a thing distasteful to the ego, whose tendency is to rest content with consciousness and aspiration on its own plane. This is almost amusing, isn't it? You know, we tend to think about these higher agencies as just dying to get in touch with us, you know. But apparently not. And so in this first one, but not necessarily, as I just stated, the ego or soul on the second and third sub levels of the mental plane is still situated below the monastic permanent atom. And so it too, i.e. the soul, ego, must reach up towards the monastic permanent atom. So, you know, what I would say here is that some of the work listed below is done by the soul in incarnation, and other of the work is done by the soul on its own plane. Soul on soul on its own plane. Well, maybe I'll just have to do that. So the soul is notice, the soul is not yet, the soul body, your glottis, causal body, is not situated on abstract levels. On the levels of higher mind, yes. But not on the first subplane of the mental plane. So sometimes it seems that it's the soul and the incarnation at work here, but it looks more like maybe I should erase this. We seem to be talking about the soul and incarnation, but not necessarily. So we have to, more likely, it's the ego or soul in the second and third sublevels, or on the second and third sublevels of the mental plane that we are speaking of. So maybe I'll just have to erase this. Since the soul is situated, the soul body is situated below the monastic permanent atom, it can itself directly approach the triad. And let's see here. I hope this brings me what I want. I think so. Yeah. Notice that the soul itself can reach out. Let's say that the soul of the person entering the Hall of Wisdom is situated on the second subplane of the mental plane. It can reach out towards the plane of abstraction, which is the first sublevel. So we don't necessarily have to have only the soul in incarnation reaching up. It does do that, but the soul on its own plane, or at least one of its own planes, i.e. the higher mental plane, can also reach out to the very highest sublevel of the higher mental plane, which is the first subplane. So that makes sense, I think. I think I caught myself there before going too far. And then we have the work with color and sound, and let's just say this too. This type of work also can be accomplished by the soul on its own plane. But also the soul in incarnation does reach up to accomplish something along these lines. But, you know, pretty much we are speaking of what the soul on its own plane is doing. And one of its own planes is the second and third level of the higher mental plane. And in another way, when we're considering the entire solar angel, its plane within the cosmic ethers is the Buddhic plane. It's a lot to keep straight, isn't it? I hope we're managing here. What else can the soul on its own plane do? It can attempt frequently to control the lower self through the power of the spiritual will under Vulcan. A thing distasteful to the ego. The ego considered as a source other than the man. Different monads. Okay. DIFT, different monads are involved, though all monads are one. Distasteful. Well, its tendency is to rest content with consciousness and aspiration on its own plane. And we might ask, in sense, aspiration towards what? It doesn't want to look below, and many of us, we may have the same attitude. I wonder if an esotericist, I seem to remember a film in which the man was a refined type, and it was said, well, he doesn't, those types don't make very good farmers. Well, you know, there are exceptions, of course, but looking downward and having to handle many mundane details, it is a sacrifice. And you can only imagine what Sanat Kumara has to do as he looks down and has to supervise sacrificially under Saturn many external details. So it's an ongoing thing that once we have achieved consciousness in the higher worlds, we have a distaste for returning to an encumbered state, a trammeled state where everything is so much more dense. But we're not, according to the law of karma, allowed to rest content with consciousness and aspiration on its own plane, because then where would the service lie? Now, and here comes an important point, forget not that the ego itself has somewhat to wrestle with. The refusal to incarnate is not found only on spiritual levels, but is found also on that of the higher self. You know, there was that sin of refusal to engage with lower forms, and it led to great problems later, developmental problems, and it contributed, I think, to what has been called the sin of the mindless and to the presence of the anthropoid apes among us, the anthropoid apes being individualized men, but in ill-favored and limited bodies, due to the refusal to incarnate of certain higher agencies who might have prevented the reproduction of man with animal, that is called the sin of the mindless. Certain developments also incidental the factors of time and space, as understood in the three worlds, are aimed at by the ego, such as the increase of the causal periphery through the study of divine telepathy, systematic psychology, systemic psychology, and the knowledge of the law of fire. Well, these developments are, you know, what would I say, beyond us to understand. They're incidental to the time-space worlds. And the ego is evolving in its own way. The ego as another being, a supervisory being, is evolving in its own way. Maybe we don't realize that, and we think of the soul or ego or soul or angel or angel of the presence as maximally unfolded or developed, but it's not. It has certain factors that it must deal with in order to continue to grow. And that's why it was said that, you know, the soul or angels are not entirely avataric. The avatar is one who descends from above with no possibility of growth from the sphere into which it is descending. In other words, it's a completely selfless act. Now, of course, there's a huge selflessness in the solar angels, but they are always as well benefiting from their falls, from their descents. So what do we have here? Relationship of the ego to its own development, and then point number three, relationship of the ego to other egos. Yeah. So far we have, discussed the relationship of the ego to the hierarchy, then two, the relationship of the ego to its own development, and then this will be the third point, the relationship of the ego to other egos. Right, and since this has a very important chart connected with it, I think I'm going to suspend talking about it until the next program. So we are on page 38, and we can see where we did begin. Maybe, if we can find it. Yeah. So this is program 10, and it goes up, we'll say, to page 38, and it is the 25th of July. All right. That was going to be the beginning. And now, this third point, we will defer the relationship of egos to other egos, of the ego to other egos. And I wonder why one is capitalized and one is not. But anyway, let's say that this is the 25th and we've ended on program 10. And we've gone from 31 to 38. And we'll begin with program 11. And we'll begin on page 38. And if I can, I'll do it today, but I'll put XX in there to begin with. Okay. So, we will get this program ready for you on Makara, and also increasingly on YouTube. We will then proceed with a very important chart that lays out groupings and numbers for the higher mental plane, for the Buddhic plane, for the Atmic plane, and for the monadic plane. Lots of love, many blessings, and we'll be back.